The following will be the Vashacharya, the Venerable Shogam Trungpa Rinpoche. This will be talk one of a seminar entitled Art and Everyday Life, given December the 13th, 1974, at Karma Choling.
Welcome, everybody. Art in everyday life. It seemed to be a destination at this point of this particular seminar. The question is that how we construct this, how we present or begin this particular approach. The main purpose of this is to set some kind of attitude, understanding in terms of life and art. That seems to be the point. If we don't have a life of our own, we don't have art of our own. Can you hear me at the back? Okay. So, we end up by discussing what life. Obviously, art, naturally. And the question of life is based on various concepts and ideas of life as being a big drama. Fantastic showpiece, and life's been absolute torture chamber, and life's been grey, goes both ways of those previous categories. We have all kinds of ideas about that. It seems to be that the problem begins from the question of trying to reshape the world, that as soon as we want to reshape the world, that we are in trouble. That you don't just reshape the world haphazardly, of course, but we reshape the world accordance with our beliefs, our dreams. So the world is reshaped accordance with our own situations that we want to see that way. So the problem at the end is that the world begins to haunt us back, because we reshaped the world already, and the world is beginning to demand more attention and more mockery, further mockery, that because it is your world and you are the maker of this world, and the mirror situation begins to take place, in which case a lot of people begin to panic enormously, say the least, begin to feel trapped in their own creation, begin to feel unjustified. They didn't deserve that. And people go back as far as to discuss the question of spirituality. And the ultimate situation of judgment. and caution of being fair to everybody. Well, everything seemed to come back to psychological situation rather than that of a physical situation that we can do something about it at the beginning. It seems the whole question is based on that we must think first before we do, obviously. And then the question becomes more complex there. How to think, what to think, why to think, what is to think. Well, no one can stop, or no one can execute martial law on your thought process, your thinking. You can think anything you want. But that doesn't seem to be the point. And the point is that the thinking process had to be directed in a certain particular area, a certain particular approach. And that particular direction does not mean necessarily that your thinking process should become accordance with certain dogma and certain philosophy and certain concepts particularly. But what one has to know, the thinker as self, and we are back to square one, thinker as self, that who thinks? What is thought process? The thought process, or the thinking process, is to begin with, the confused one, if you really look into the depth of its own existence, that whole thing is extraordinarily confused and jumbled up with a lot of other stuff that we have collected throughout the life of birth and death, existence, world, in our world. So the question is that if we work with that to begin with, then could we produce some work of art? Is there any hope that finally the world will be that is being desired or dreamed as a perfect world? The world that manifests itself is a recreation of the golden age. Well, that's also doubtful at the same time. Nobody knows, nobody had experienced absolute golden age, and even if somebody had already created a golden age, it is doubtful that whether that is going to satisfy us. Or we begin to feel that there is a problem with that. So in this sense that we are begin to discuss how to begin our world. We haven't begun our world actually. We were the subject of world up to this point, which we can't avoid. But from this point onward, we haven't begun our world, so we are the master of the world, we are the creator of the world. We can do whatever we want, whatever you like. You can do anything you want. So that we seem to have a lot of power at this point, and we can do what we want. Well, the question is that since we begin to feel that we are in a very powerful situation, that being in the present situation that we can reshape the whole future, shouldn't we be more careful, shouldn't we be more awake in what we are doing this point, this very moment? And I think a suggestion would come quite strongly that sure, we should do something. Positive, intelligent, for that matter, negative, intelligent. As long as there's intelligence is involved, that there seems to be no problem of finding our way through. The crux of the matter is that how we do it, what we do it. Do we just sit and wait? Or do we read lots of stacks and stacks of books and try to collect some ideas out of it? Or do we take miles and miles of journeys and try to meet with a supposedly clever, enlightened people and trying to collect information from them? Well, at this end, since we do not know what we are doing, if we did something that, in the light of what we are not knowing what we are doing, it seemed to be fruitless. That quite possibly we end up by bumping into somebody who is absolutely absurd, and we begin to get some false ideas about what they had to say, and we begin to regard that as our first discovery, and we begin to mess up our future. And quite possibly that we could collect all kinds of garbages by reading books and misunderstanding and understanding partially could create enormous chaos, that we become obviously a walking book, but what's after that? Another alternative is just to have a good time. Go to Florida, California, South America, drink tequila, listen to sweet music. Just forget everything. Have a good time. That is not quite what we talk about nowness. Particularly, neither of them seem to be nowness, or being in the now, particularly. Well, nothing seemed to be the ideal situation to fill that gap of nowness. Whatever we do, we are involving into some kind of trips, which is basically inspired from enormous sense of deception or sense of boredom, which led us into entertaining ourselves or trying to entertain ourselves. That whole process becomes constant rat race, a vicious circle, that there is no end, no beginning. Purely absurd. There is another suggestion might come up, is that go and practice meditation. Trying to raise your consciousness, whatever that may be. Imitate the holy man. Try to become a holy person. That seemed to be the same thing. So at this point, that whatever we do, that we can't get out of it, anything, we don't seem to be doing anything real. We are trying to mimic that, this, and this, constantly, all the time. There's nothing really personal, nothing really personal, nothing really real in terms of experiential, and everything is a copying, and you're doing something, following something, trying to find new materials to fit our own confused jigsaw puzzle. And somehow, not only question of it doesn't work, but it's also question of that it seems to be the wrong end of the stick at the same time. Well, if you expect that I'll give you the answer, that's very hard to come by. It seems that whenever there is a concrete answer, that you have that problem, therefore take this pill, do this. It seemed to be founded upon false premises. For the very reason that you find answer because that you're weak, therefore you've been fed by nipples. If you feel lonely, you play with the toys. And have a babysitter. Let me read you a story, bedtime story. Let me sing you a lullaby, and etc. We are back to square one. If you really want to do something properly, we could say that quite safely. If you really want to do it genuinely, we got to be back to square one and have to taste that, have to experience that, which is seen to be a problem of art and everyday life, as cliché goes, is that any work of art is expressing ourselves in a certain particular term, certain particular concept. Artistic talent is expressed in a medium of all kinds. But what is artistic talent? What makes you artistic? What convinced you is uncertain. That a work of art is a real expression of yourself. Or the work of art is something to make sure that the rest of the world around you would convince about you, would be convinced about you, so that in turn you find yourself a ground to exist. And such question has never been looked at, studied properly. And I think from this point of view that the genuine artistic talent is the is experiencing a sense of being back to square one and completely bewildered by it. That is the first expression of art, is sense of that copying, imitating, tuning into a philosophy, tuning into spiritual waves, or anything, but at the same time, beyond that, that if a person begin to feel that you are back to square one, and completely bewildered, and then you have beautiful white canvas in front of you. This particular seminar is, by the way, not particularly designed to an artist as such, and the title is happens to be just accident. And being a good artist needs a lot of ideas and a lot of tricks and the concepts. And hopefully this particular seminar will not provide that for the sake of our sanity. If it did so, I take everything back what I've said and what might be said. I find myself working in administration, organizational situations, which involves looking into economy, aesthetics, and social situations of a group of people involved. Educational decision making of all kinds. And I find the best time I can make decisions when my mind is completely blank. And when I find myself back to square one, which is absolute unbiased level of mind, and something takes place in that level. I'm not particularly encouraging or suggesting that might be the trick, particularly at this point. That's just a another story, which could be very fishy at this point. And I think being back to square one and cutting all the connections, all the root, at the same time appreciating the shadows of them, obviously, that you still respect your umbilical cord because you have a tummy button. Nobody had plastic surgery of that, and nobody regarded that as an ugly mark, but it is regarded as organic expression that you've been born on this world, and you have a tummy button. Back to square one. That seemed to be the starting point of any kind of expressions that we might express, genuine expressions that we might express. Genuine expressions had to be genuine one, self-existing one, born within one. So if you're going to express such genuine expressions, that we had to get back to genuine ground, and so far as we are concerned up to this point is concerned, is the only genuine ground that we have is back to square one. Any questions?
What is square one and how do you get back to it?
How to what?
How do you get back to square one and what is it?
Well, I think if you cut all kinds of roots and all kinds of fascinations and all kinds of entertainment, if you regard everything as being a trip, everything as being just a conmanship in a very subtle sense, and what you have, you might say nothing. But it's not quite nothing, it's back to square one. And I think the question is that one's genuine existence, genuine expressions shouldn't be colored by any form of artificiality, how subtle, how magnificent, how beautiful, how holy they may be, but still it is discoloring your existence. So if you have a sense of ultimate cynical attitude of seeing through any trips that laid on you, anyone trying to influence you, or even you yourself influence over somebody's idea, borrowed concept from somebody else's notion, and if you see through them, then you are back to square one, you know, what else you have except your square one. That's not difficult. I mean, we are constantly back to square one. If you're in the midst of making decisions and not knowing what to do, confused, terrified, sick, we are constantly back to square one. And we feel extremely weak and not knowing how to proceed next strategy, and we are back to square one. It's very familiar ground. Nothing particularly extraordinary state of mind, particularly highly ordinary.
Well, doesn't each decision somehow imply a strategy that takes us off square one?
Doesn't what?
Doesn't each decision that we make imply a strategy that then takes us off square one? Imply some philosophy or imply some...
Each decision?
Yeah, once we make the decision.
It does. And sometimes it doesn't. If that's a genuine expressions that come from square one, then it is a very personal one. But most of the times, I think it does.
So then it isn't genuinely from square one, but...
Well, I mean, take an example, like if you fall in love, that the conditions that you fall in love to somebody is not because your husband or your wife is a wealthy person and has a lot of intelligence and breadwinner, and she will be good for me, he will be good for me. And if you don't have those particular accessories, and then when you begin to like somebody as another human being, that you appreciate him or her as your mate, and then you're operating from square one's point of view, whereas that you'd be talked into by your parents and matched to marriage of some kind, or religious concept of some kind, then it is operating from a square 33.
In other words, it takes no maintenance than the decision.
Yeah, it's genuine, felt, personally experienced experience. It's like fire burns, water is moisture, air is moving, space is spacious, you know, in a level of elements.
Square one is a dangerous situation. I mean, being at square one can also be dangerous ground, couldn't it?
Well, it's your ground. And if you are dangerous to yourself, there's nothing you can do about it. But usually that doesn't happen. And you don't eat yourself up. Even if you do, you have some purpose to do that, which is still a sense of survival. So if you're on your own ground, I don't think there's any danger. There's only danger, it's danger for yourself. But usually there is some element in you which is a seed of sanity. Essence of sanity, if something's operating, if you're on your back to square one, there's something which is a positive thing's happening. And if you feel that being back to square one is dangerous, that must be another square, not really being back in square one properly.
You said that being with square one could be associated with feeling confused and also feeling a bit weak and not knowing what to do. And it seems that if you felt that way, and also if you were familiar with your own trippiness, that you might just wind up in some sort of total paranoia of doing anything at all. You would be so afraid that you would trip out, and also this feeling of not knowing what to do, that you would just sit all day and look at the four walls in total ignorance. And it would that be square one?
Actually, that situation might be healthier than wasting your time doing something else. That's everything is bound to that in eventually. And I think there's no problem particularly with that. And you are somewhat exaggerating the situation for your own security, maybe, or whatever. But I think such situation of being cornered is good, if we can use such terminology. It's fruitful. It's genuinely a square one situation that unless you be cornered, you don't do anything really very much. And once you be cornered, then you begin to exercise your sanity, intelligence. And that's usually the characteristics of behavior, human behavior, it usually is. And I don't think anybody will stand all that long afraid to make a move. But I think that situation might prove to be an embryonic situation.
So from that point of view then, with the idea that you would go back to square one, and then from square one, you would then sort of make your move, you know. Then as long as you're starting from square one, from this point of view, then possibly it wouldn't really matter what you do. In other words,
that's right, because that's in keeping with your basic intelligence, basic instinct, and so forth.
Would that situation have any relationship to what we commonly call intuition, trusting your intuition? Or is
trusting
that slightly
what?
Trusting your intuition, or would that
well,
be slightly different?
I think
different?
It's more than that, actually. Trusting your intuition is colored by all kinds of materials. That intuition is conditioned by concepts of all kinds, usually. I mean, we seldom have the transparent intuition. Our intuition is very solid and influenced by, colored by all kinds of things. In this case, when we talk about back to square one, is just a simple, straightforward, that you feel you've been cornered, you have to pounce out another one way or another. And not knowing exactly what to do, and you feel very vivid about the whole reality around you, and you know that you'll be cornered at the same time, and the process of paranoia, you'll be purified at the same time as well. You'll be stripped to a waist and downward as well to your toenail, your floor, you're standing on. So you have nothing to hide, you're completely transparent, you're square, you're cornered. It's more than intuition, it's experience than intuition. Intuitive process is still have a kind of radar system, a rather than experience. And this is much more real in some sense, you know, very direct and somewhat extraordinarily penetrating.
That you wouldn't get into on your own, that you would find yourself in. Is that
well,
is
you
that
could correct? Get yourself in, you know, that's the part of the discipline. That's why in the Buddhist tradition we call path. That could be the part of the path that's not going particularly forward and speeding to your goal, but coming backward and getting into it, right, into the whole thing rather than getting out of it particularly. And sometimes you find that rugs pulled under your feet, that you find yourself back to square one.
What seemed to me that certainly in my own experience that the time when this has occurred most often is when I've either put myself on the horns of a dilemma or I have been put into the horns of a dilemma that sometimes lasts for quite a period, you know, and then I can sense this experience of intuition which comes through very strongly and directly. Is there any advantage to training oneself by putting oneself on the horns of a dilemma to get to square one?
Well, I don't think there's a point if you regard this as a kind of, if more you get tortured, you get more wisdom out of it. But if you could work with such a situation and not particularly trying to get out of it and sit with it and nurse that particular experience, of immense desolate situation, of not finding anything to fool around with, then it seems to be there's something to it, definitely. Yeah, that's a good one.
If you've disguised and laid trips on square one over and over again, how do you cut through the many, many layers of square one to get
to... Well, I don't think you can do that. Square one is where you come back to, where you finally turn back to your backbone. And again, that there is a problem. If you heard too much of the merit about the square oneness, then obviously this becomes a doctrine again, you know. That ceases to become square one. It's something else. And you could hardly call it square one. And that's just something else. But genuine square one is that when you realize that the desolateness and spaciousness and all kinds of words we can use for that is, you know, completely devoid of any feedbacks at all. You know, that you be pushed back. And that punched on your nose. And you are there sitting cross-eyed. Like an owl made out of gold. But still, slightly sick because you finally confronted your good old self, but at the same time feels rather relieved because you can still maintain your existence. I think that type of square one we are talking about, the primordial one, rather than that imaginary or doctrinally conceived idea or concept. It has to be a really genuine one.
Could square one be described as a place where you're devoid of defense mechanisms, like culturally passed on to you, conditioned into you by, well, like thousands of years of Western culture for me, for instance.
Yeah. Not necessarily. I think it's, did you say devoid of culture? Did you say?
More defense mechanisms.
Defense mechanism. No, not necessarily. It should be devoid of any culture. When you're in a low moment of your energy, completely beaten down to death, and it feels like you're a piece of shit, and you don't feel any culture about that. You feel very genuinely non-cultural, and definitely real at the same time, square one.
From square one be called a work of art?
That whole thing is a work of art, yeah, pouncing as well.
Well, possibly could the pounce from square one be mistaken as an impulse, as a automatic reaction that's rather a reaction to the situation rather than a sort of like an automatic, as you've talked of, an automatic eye and hand.
Well, I think we can't be too pure about that. And it could be impulse at the same time, which is also work of art. One of the problems of work of art is that being calculated, either spontaneously or otherwise, calculated work of art. Anything that you can come up with, spontaneity, seems to ring genuine work of art. So I think at the beginning that when you are not very friendly with your square oneness, you feel that you escaped from your square one and you do things impulsively. But as you go on, that you find that being back to square one is not all that bad, it is workable. Then, quite possibly, you begin to develop a sense of dignity, which is not based on the impulse. So that seems to be a sense of growth of experience.
Seems that at that point of reaching square one, there must be some relationship with the guru in terms of your emotional reaction to that suddenness of having the rug pulled out from under you. On the other hand, there's a question of trying to avoid the desolation of the situation. When do you begin to have the sense of escape or the sense of trying to avoid that situation by your relationship with the guru?
Well, I think that's quite an advanced question. And basically speaking, from that point of view, that just between us, it's a question of I think it's a question of magic of some kind, that there is some kind of fermentation is taking place under the name of Back to Square One. Which is based on the idea of the energy of Guru and his lineage, and the sense of playfulness of the sanity that exists, and your newly discovered sanity play between back and forth. And there is a sense of enormous range of festival takes place, which is something quite different topic. Just between ourselves. Well, we should probably say goodnight, everybody, at this point. And I think it's about time. 11:30. Once again, thank you, everybody, coming, taking part in this. And another thing I would like to stress further is that having taken part in the seminar at this point, and I would like to encourage you to try to do as much as sitting practice that seem to be part of our seminar package approach, is that sense of non-thinking is necessary, at the same time sense of thinking process. And according to our Buddhist tradition, that a sitting practice and meditation provides basic footing, solid ground to develop understanding of further experiences. So we feel somewhat guilty if we provide just pure seminar which contains purely discussions and talks and words and words and words. We felt that we have planted further confusion in a world of confusion. Whereas if people sit and stop thinking and talking by means of meditation, we feel that we planted further dynamite in the transcending world of confusion. And so, on behalf of ourselves and on behalf of you, that it would be good if you could take part in the sitting practice as much as you can, as much as physically possible, psychologically possible, and in terms of needing further instructions how to sit, how to meditate, and the sitting meditation, that meditation advisors are available for you, who also are students, who are training themselves to be helpers to people, that we have a group of people here having downstairs. So it would be good that if you could get into a sitting practice meditation as much as you could, and quite possibly that what we might discuss tomorrow or the day after might become more clear and sane. And we could also influence the national neurosis by that way. And keep that in mind. Thank you very much.